Welcome to the My Ag Life Daily News Report here on this Monday. I'm Lori Boyer. Today is a My Ag Life in Almonds episode. And coming up, we'll talk about the recent ABC Transportation Survey and how that affects almond producers. And that begins right after this word from our sponsor.
There's giant potential sleeping in your soil. Under drought conditions, it's never been more important to wake it up. Phycoterra, a superior soil microbial food, activates the native microbes responsible for your soil's health and water-holding capacity. Adding Phycoterra to your crop increases water retention up to 10% and optimizes crop nutrient availability. Plus, it delivers excellent mixability and application flexibility, making it easy to add to your existing crop input strategy. Visit Phycoterra.com to learn how you can wake up your soil's giant potential with Phycoterra.
Almonds destined for the export market have filled warehouses and container yards as growers, handlers, and shippers grapple with the ongoing transportation disruptions happening at California ports. A shortage of containers, chassis, drivers, and unreliable carrier practices are all contributing to the growing problem. Recently, the Almond Board's Global Technical and Regulatory Affairs staff conducted an online transportation survey with major handlers, together representing 38% of California's almond export market, to get a better understanding of how global shipping disruptions are directly affecting the industry. Almond Board of California's Senior Analyst of Government Affairs, Brock Denzel, explains that the survey had to be conducted to figure out all of the economic implications of the export crisis and really know where costs are going up.
We looked at everything from warehousing space and transportation costs to container fees, the actual fees to ship the product overseas. So we looked at a pretty wide range of aspects there and really just wanted to kind of get some more information, be able to drill down on some hard numbers for what the impact is across the industry. We had a very good response rate, I thought. We ended up getting responses that represent about 38% of all of the pounds of almonds that are exported. We're able to extrapolate that data based on sort of what we know about the respondents and really be able to make some assumptions about the industry as a whole.
Key findings from the survey noted that shipping costs, administrative costs, and storage costs are all going up. The survey also gave insights into some issues that haven't necessarily been at the forefront during this crisis.
I think we saw some really great information coming on some additional food safety and quality precautions that are needed to be taken, and also some administrative costs just with getting these getting product out of the country. So kind of overall, you know, again, things we kind of knew, but we were able to drill down to better numbers on. ABC found an average increase per container fee of 54%, and that didn't really change whether we were shipping to the EU or to Asia. That was pretty standard throughout. We also saw that detention and demurrage fees, the amount of an increase that we saw from the respondents ranged anywhere from 15% to a 200% increase year over year. That, you know, I kind of refer back to this UC Davis study that saw that California's containerized exports fell by about $2.1 billion, the value of those exports, from May to September of 2021. And we weren't able to kind of nail down an exact number, but certainly what we were seeing in the results of sort of overall total impact certainly fell in line with that number as well. In terms of things that maybe we didn't know, that certainly we had some interesting insights that came out of this survey, are certainly on the administrative costs and sort of the warehousing space as well. And on the administrative costs, we found that just the administrative cost per container being shipped is up 44% from the previous year. And each consignment takes an extra 9 staff hours to complete. That means just to get one additional shipment out of the country, it now takes an entire extra day of staff time. And there's a lot of shipments, a lot of consignments going out or trying to get out. So obviously, you know, we see those types of impacts. We also found that on the quality and safety measures, 93% of the respondents to our survey indicated that due to delays, they were forced to take additional preventative measures, such as increased inventory controls or fumigation methods as well. You know, kind of to maybe take a brief step back, you know, we had been hearing about warehousing shortages and some potential issues there.
Something surprising that the Allman Board found was that many processors that took the survey and that they spoke to had to rent out additional storage.
A lot of them had just finished completion of a new warehousing space and were able to kind of take in that inventory and you know, the decreased product getting out of the country, you know, were able to adapt a little bit better. But this is really a big concern, especially as we head into, you know, the rest of this crop year, what bloom is going to be like. Obviously, we don't know these types of things, but there is still a lot of concern out there about warehousing space.
Increased quality and safety costs are another point to look at.
It's one of the largest increases year over year. I think probably in line with something like what we were seeing in the detention and demurrage space, that sort of percent increase year over year is certainly in that range.
While the Almond Board of California is a federal marketing order and can't necessarily directly help with mitigating these export crisis issues, the board is in close and constant contact with the Almond Alliance and the Ag Transportation Coalition.
Both of those organizations have been out in front, both in Washington and in Sacramento, as well as, you know, sort of doing what they can within the port system there. And really, they've been pushing a number of different initiatives. I've heard about conversations regarding, you know, increasing truck weight limits, which may help. Same thing with maybe potential changes to some box rules. And then, of course, the big elephant is the Ocean Shipping Reform Act, which passed the House late last year, and it has a Senate companion that has been making its way through that process as well. I know that both of those organizations have come out publicly and supported that legislation. And so I certainly think that it's something that as an industry, we keep our eye on and, you know, really understand what's happening in that space.
That was our first segment of the day. We'll be right back with our next segment where Ashton Carr reports on the recent PEAR statewide research webinar.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcast, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
Held earlier this month was the 2022 California Statewide PEAR Research Webinar. This event was co-sponsored by UC Cooperative Extension, Lake and Mendocino Agricultural Commissioners, California PEAR Advisory Board, and the PEAR Pest Management Research Fund. The program featured recent research results from PEAR industry-funded projects, as well as some information pertinent to the industry when it comes to law. We got to talk to Rachel Elkin, who is the University of California Cooperative Extension Pomology Farm Advisor Emeritus, about this event.
The webinar featured three talks focused on disease and insect management, one talk on horticultural research focused on rootstock training systems and spacing for high-density, mechanization-friendly pear orchards. That was mine. An overview of the UC Fruit and Nut Research and Information Center housed at UC Davis, which provides which is a very, very broad outreach venue for many aspects of growing fruits and nuts in California, and of which the pear topic is part of. And our Lake County Agricultural Commissioner, Catherine Vanderwall, she discussed pesticide laws and regulations, and in a half hour talk. And in California, we have agricultural commissioners in each county. So they are part of our county government, but they enforce state California Department of Pesticide Regulation and California Department of Food and Agriculture law and locally. And they're the growers and the pest control advisors, everybody who is licensed has a private applicator certificate, qualified applicator certificate, pest control advisor license, has to have a certain number of units each year to maintain their licenses. And Catherine provided a half an hour of laws and regs information pertaining to issues, problems that come up when the commissioner staff does inspections or with growers and things that come up that they often find they have to have growers and operators correct. I would like to emphasize one aspect of the fire blight and the pear scab talks that were given by Dr. Jim Adiscavage and Dr. Akif Eskelin, respectively. And that is that both researchers really emphasized the need to rotate and mix up a disease program using different modes of action in order to avoid resistance to of the fire blight bacteria and pear scab fungus, respectively, to the various materials that are sprayed, antibiotics and fungicides. And the concept of mixing materials, rotating materials, and not using the same mode of action consistently through the season and amongst and season to season is the most crucial thing a grower can do, and recommendations made to avoid resistance.
Rachel herself also spoke at the event at the beginning and end, and we got to hear a little bit more about what her presentations entailed.
My talk was an update on a 10-year trial that is part of a multi-state trial within the multi-state NC-140 regional rootstock group, which the NC-140 project basically tests rootstocks, new rootstocks, mainly size controlling and potential dwarfing rootstocks and precocious rootstocks for fruit trees. And the trial that I've been working on, I just completed my 9th year. And it is part of a 3-state trial, Oregon, New York, and California, of which 2 of the states, New York and California, trials are still in existence. And this next year, the 2022 season, will be the final year of the trial, after which I will complete the write-ups and publish the information, summarize everything that we have found. But basically, it's testing a multivariable trial, testing a combination of 4 training systems, 3 spacings, and 3 rootstocks for Bartlett pear, in my case. And it's located in Mendocino County along the Russian River.
The recordings from the webinar will be uploaded to the California Pear Advisory Board. So check out their website for more info.
Coming up next, a check-in of regional agricultural news here on My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer.
Soil and Crop Incorporated is your number one resource for sustainable nutrition. Growers are faced with difficult challenges, and Soil and Crop Inc. has the experience, fertilizer, and biological portfolio to dramatically increase yield and performance in your troubled orchards and fields. Contact Soil and Crop Incorporated today for a free consultation on how we can help reverse the challenges you face as a conventional or organic grower so you can increase your bottom line and become a better sustainable farmer. Contact us today at 559-564-1236 or visit our website at www.callnrg.com. Soil and Crop, putting nature to work for you.
In regional agricultural news, the California Department of Food and Agriculture's Office of Environmental Farming and Innovation is accepting public comments for its draft request for grant applications for the Pollinator Habitat Program. The program was established by the Budget Act of 2021. An allocation of $15 million to CDFA was made for fiscal year 2021 to 2022 to provide grant funding for the establishment of pollinator habitat on agricultural land throughout California. CDFA was directed to administer the program and to prioritize native habitats for the benefit of native biodiversity and the use of locally appropriate native plant seed mixes when feasible. The Pollinator Habitat Program is aligned with the suite of Climate Smart Agriculture Incentive Programs administered by OEFI. The program's primary objective is to support pollinators through provision of floral resources, host plants, and other elements of suitable habitat. Funded projects will be expected to provide benefits for California's biodiversity and agricultural production. Projects will support integrated pest management, support beneficial species beyond pollinators, and enhance carbon sequestration and improve soil health, among other co-benefits. Pollinators are essential to many of California's agricultural crops and to the vast biodiversity of California's natural ecosystems. Unfortunately, due to a variety of factors, including habitat destruction, pesticides, disease, and climate change, pollinators are in decline, affecting agricultural and natural ecosystems. It is a goal of the Pollinator Habitat Program to strengthen pollinator populations. Resource Conservation Districts, University of California, California Community Colleges, California State Universities, nonprofits, and federally and California recognized Native American tribes will be eligible to receive funding. Stakeholders are encouraged to review the draft request for applications on the Pollinator Habitat website. Comments are due by April 18th. The website for more information is cdfa.ca.gov/OEFI/PHP/, or call 916-654-0462. Bristol Farms, Southern California's leading specialty grocer, opened its new concept, Bristol Farms Newfound Market, last Thursday. The nearly 34,000 square foot location features seven of its own chef created restaurant brands, serving dishes made with local and global ingredients. The market features an open, warm, and modern environment designed to bring a unique shopping experience to Orange County. The grand opening celebration shined a spotlight on emerging brands and local favorites, with many founders in attendance. Guests were able to enter giveaways and enjoy sampling throughout the store last Thursday. Here's some of the offerings that are found at the Bristol Farms Newfound Market's Elevated Food Hall: Horton's Hot Chicken, an artisan fried chicken shop; Rooted Plant-Based Plates, a fast casual venue offering signature and seasonal vegan dishes; Swell Seafood, inspired by seafood shacks along the Pacific Highway. There is also Heart and Hand, a European-inspired cafe with an outdoor patio and fire pit; and Viaggio Pizzeria, a full-service restaurant with outdoor seating that offers seasonal menus featuring artisanal pizzas, pastas, craft cocktails, and a curated wine and beer list. Many of the menu items are available for delivery on DoorDash. The importance of farming in the San Joaquin Valley is shown in a new report that captures the significant economic impact of the nation's largest agriculture water district, which spans parts of Fresno and Kings counties. Westlands Water District, which runs from Kettleman City on the south to near Firebaugh on the north, had a total economic impact of $4.7 billion in 2019, the most recent year for which data is available. When it comes to employment, Westlands' 700 farms supported more than 35,000 jobs. Of those, 16,000 were linked directly to farm work, while nearly 18,000 were secondary jobs involved in processing the fruits, vegetables, and nuts grown in the district. At 35,000 jobs tied to Westlands, the district is the largest employer by far in Fresno and Kings counties. Things are looking positive for California's cabbage growers. So far, everything's looking good as far as all the varieties, according to Frankie Oliver, field supervisor at Pacific Fresh's Produce in Oxnard. He says it's been really good quality and everything's coming along just right. In 2019, the most recent year with statewide figures available, California farmers planted 14,800 acres of cabbage and harvested 14,500, according to the California Department of Food and Agriculture. Yield was 410 tons of cabbage per acre, worth just over $212.2 million. Cabbage acreage in the state was relatively steady through the 2010s, according to CDFA, trending slightly downward from 13,700 acres planted in 2010 before growing to a high of 14,900 acres in 2017. Oliver says his biggest headache so far is the diamondback moth, which has been vexing growers in Ventura County and elsewhere. In the Imperio Valley, the winter vegetable season is nearing its conclusion. Most of the desert vegetable crops will finish within the next couple of weeks. Cabbage could be extended another week or more, depending on quality and availability. With the opening of a 16-acre greenhouse in Tehachapi, California last fall, Revel Greens claims to be the largest lettuce greenhouse grower in the United States, and most of its production is USDA-certified organic. Brandon Krieg, vice president of sales and marketing and one of the five founders of the company, said Revel Greens has made considerable headway since its founding in 2017 and the launch of its first branded product of baby leaf lettuce in February of 2018 from its Minnesota facility, and it is poised for significant growth. In the next few years as it can quadruple its California operation. The company has started construction on a 20-acre greenhouse in Temple, Texas, and has acquired a small greenhouse in Georgia for future production in that region. Revel Greens was launched by five partners with different areas of expertise, including farming, greenhouse technology, and marketing skills. Krieg had been a produce buyer at Target, specializing in leafy greens. What he brings to the table is the knowledge that the supply chain issues and food safety concerns have created space in the market for a reliable producer of sustainably grown greenhouse lettuces. With crop cycling every 2 to 3 weeks, Craig said 16 acres of greenhouse production is equivalent to about 500 acres of open field yields from the Tehachapi facility. Revel Greens is producing several baby leaf products, salad kits, living romaine, and butterhead lettuce, as well as chopped romaine.
Sponsored by the California Walnut Board and Commission. Delivering value to growers and handlers with advocacy, research programs, and walnut promotions. Doing more together.
The war in Ukraine diverted the House Committee's attention for a few moments last Wednesday from climate change to the urgent farm impacts of war. The hearing was billed as a 2022 review of the Farm Bill, the role of USDA programs in addressing climate change. But the day had started with an emotionally rousing speech by the Ukrainian president to lawmakers by video link, and it carried over to the ag hearing. Georgia's Austin Scott.
Ukrainian farmers put 50 million metric tons of corn and wheat into the global food supply. Trade in the Black Sea is closed. Russia and Belarus, they're the number two and the number three producer of potash in the world. If our crops inside the United States do not have access to fertilizer, then the yields inside the United States and other major food producers will go down.
Scott asked Chairman David Scott to hold a hearing on the issue and the potential for widespread hunger and unrest if the void is not filled.
I will be asking you and others of my colleagues to join me in sending a letter to Secretary Vilsack to bring some additional tools to help address this humanitarian crisis that is now taking place as a result of this terrible, awful Russian invasion.
Scott vowed that the House Ag Committee will be out front in doing all it can to prevent a global hunger crisis. But American Farm Bureau Federation's Dave Samuelson says there's already a toll.
An awful lot of tonnage that's still sitting in ports in Ukraine of wheat and corn, sunflower oil, that has yet to be shipped. So that's certainly putting upward pressure on prices. And countries around the world are looking for alternative supplies. You can see that China is buying a lot of soybeans for now, and I think contracting for next year from the U.S.
But the bigger question is whether the U.S. and others can fill the void, a question Samuelson says can only be answered by how long the war in Ukraine persists, how high input costs rise, and the weather. The United States will begin trade talks with the United Kingdom this week in Baltimore, Maryland. Reuters News says cementing a trade deal with the U.S. was one of the main goals of the push to get Britain out of the European Union. The negotiations will take place today and tomorrow, followed by another meeting in Britain later this spring. U.S. Trade Representative Catherine Tai says the talks will explore how the United States and the United Kingdom can collaborate to advance mutual international trade priorities rooted in shared values while also promoting innovation and inclusive economic growth for workers and businesses on both sides of the Atlantic. The countries will discuss collaborating on easing supply chain congestion, decarbonizing their economies, promoting digital trade, and supporting each other's domestic workforces and labor rights. The UK government says it looks forward to deepening the already thriving $153 billion relationship. As companies globally react to the risks of fertilizer shortages because of the Russian invasion of Ukraine, companies with access to potash mines are increasing production. Nutrien Ltd. has announced that in response to the uncertainty of potash supply from Eastern Europe, the company will increase potash production capability by nearly 1 million metric tons to approximately 15 million metric tons in 2022. The additional volume is expected to be produced in the second half of the year from its mines in Saskatchewan, Canada. The U.S. relies heavily on potash from other countries, importing as much as 96% of all demand, or about 11.5 million metric tons of potash annually, of which more than 85% comes from Canada. Russia and Belarus, two countries now facing sanctions and implementing their own export bans on products, combined to account for about 12% of U.S. potash imports. Combined, Russia and Belarus account for roughly 40% of global potash supplies. A temporary site to house agriculture containers for shipping is being planned for another West Coast port to reduce port congestion and improve timeliness of shipment to markets. USA Ag News reporter Rod Bain.
The latest planned pop-up site at a U.S. port, part of ongoing efforts to improve shipping of our nation's ag commodities to export markets, has been announced.
We're expanding that opportunity now to include the Port of Seattle.
Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack says announcement will be made in coming weeks on both funds for payments to ag companies and cooperatives with placing containers of American-grown commodities at the Port of Seattle pop-up site and details regarding the application process.
We are partnering with the Northwest Seaport Alliance to essentially enhance access to a 49-acre pop-up site that will be designed to accept either dry agricultural products or refrigerated containers.
The Port of Seattle pop-up site joins a companion project at the Port of Oakland, California, as planned temporary storage facilities to be more quickly loaded onto ships at export terminals and help both reduce port congestion and supply chain disruptions. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
More than 1,000 U.S. farmers and other biofuel supporters in a letter delivered to the White House by the Renewable Fuels Association have asked the Biden administration to turn to biofuels with rising gasoline prices and White House efforts to secure additional crude oil supplies from other nations to replace Russian oil banned for export to the U.S. The Biden administration is seeing increasing pressure to restore year-round E15 availability across the country and step up the production of ethanol and biodiesel as a way to replace Russian imports and to address all-time high gasoline prices. In recent weeks, the Biden administration opened a strategic petroleum reserve, a move the farmer said would have a very modest impact on oil supplies, but would not address the problem long-term. The farmers and biofuel producers told Biden biofuels, such as ethanol, are underutilized in today's fuels market because outdated government regulations handcuff market access and deny consumers choice at the pump.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing Team, thank you for listening.